Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. My name is David Law, commentator for BT Sport this week in Singapore. That's where I'm coming from right now. Also work for BBC Radio 5 Live, joined, of course, by Catherine Whittaker, who has just hot-footed it back from Vienna, where she was attending tiebreak 10s, the tournament, the Erste Bank Open 500 is just about to start as well, with Andy Murray in action and Dominic Thiem and so forth. And Catherine and I are here to talk to you all on the Tennis Podcast. Catherine, how are you doing? It's 3 a.m. here.
It's 3 a.m. and yet you are about 10 times as energetic as I am at 7:52 p.m. On a Monday evening. Yes, you are a marvel, David. But yes, I've spent my day hot-footing. I had Wiener Schnitzel for breakfast at Vienna Airport this morning, so I think it's safe to say I've had the Austrian experience, and saw Jamie Murray on the plane. I was just shuffling right to the back of the plane where my very glamorous seat was, and saw Jamie Murray sat there, and I thought, it's Monday morning. What? He can't have lost already. Had a quick check of my app to check that, you know, something, you know, they hadn't, I don't know, scheduled some first round doubles matches for the Sunday or something that escaped my notice. But no, he hadn't lost. And I asked him what he was doing on the plane, because I'd seen him in the stadium in Vienna the day before, on Sunday, yesterday. And he said he was flying back for the day to collect his OBE. And he has to fly back to Vienna tomorrow evening. He said the tournament couldn't guarantee him which day he'd be playing. They could guarantee that he wouldn't be playing on the Tuesday, which was the day he was actually collecting the OBE, will be the day he's collecting it, but that he would have to be there for the Monday, be there on Sunday, when the order of play came out on Monday, just on the off chance that he was playing, which he then wasn't. So he now knows he's not playing till Wednesday, but he's got to fly back, collect the blooming OBE, middle class problems, first world problems, and then fly back to Vienna tomorrow night.
Middle class. I mean, we're first world and middle
first,
class.
I think what I mean is first privileged problems to have. He was by no means complaining. He said it's a bit of a strange schedule.
Can we call it world class achieving, brilliant, deserving winner problems?
Yes. Yes. If we want to be, you know, completely facetious, yes, we can.
Excellent. I definitely want to be completely facetious. That's my
David.
That's my standard default mode, so I'm quite happy to be in that mode. I can see that it is irritating, and I have to say, the next time I'm going back for my OBE, I'm not going to be happy about having to.
Oh, it'll be a knighthood, yeah. David. It'll be a knighthood. And whatever tournament you're in, I'm sure they will
give me
base
a Thursday
their schedule
start
around
for commentary.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry about it one bit.
Oh, thanks. Brilliant. Now, Catherine, good anecdote, by the way. I am, as I said, in Singapore, where we've just had the first 2 days of the WTA finals. And my goodness, we've had some good matches already. 3 of them have gone the distance. And we've had 2 today that, put it this way, you know what this is like, Catherine, when you're in responsible for doing the flash interview at the end of matches, and you kind of go to the position where you have to do them about three games before what you think might be the end of the match. And in the match that I was doing that for, which was Muguruza against Pliskova, I went there thinking it was the end of the match three different times and ended up having to completely change my plans. I mean, we ended up, to just let you know what's happened so far, we started day one with a pretty straightforward and rather dull match between Madison Keys and Simona Halep. Halep winning comfortably in straight sets. Keys, frankly, we'll be hearing from her later on the tennis podcast, she sounded pretty nervous and not that surprising, really, that she struggled in her first match. That's why round robin is quite good, I suppose. Halep was fantastic. Kerber against Sybil Kova was one of the matches of the year. Both players hitting way more winners than unforced errors. Eventually, Kerber managed to win through. Today, we've had the first match of the day. I was commentating on that one, which was Svetlana Kuznetsova, who's come flying in from Moscow with hardly any preparation, somehow defeating the defending champion, Agnieszka Radwańska, having saved a match point, and more of that later because Kuznetsova's behaviour on the court was bizarre. And then we've had Pliskova coming back from 4-love in the decider against Garbiñe Muguruza to win through 7-5. So it's been eventful, and I have to say, I've really enjoyed it. I've never been to Singapore before. I've never been to the WTA finals, and it's really been great, the atmosphere here.
Yeah, well, we were texting about when we could record the podcast, and you said, I've just got to interview Muguruza first. And at that point, she was 5-4 up and about to serve for the match. And it very much looked like you were going to be interviewing Garbiñe Muguruza. And you didn't, did you? You interviewed Karolina Pliskova. And you got a smile out of her, David. Is that accurate? You got a laugh, a smile, just a smile?
Well, I thought it was one anyway, and I certainly am immensely proud. And the reason I got that laugh and smile is because I asked Pliskova about her next opponent, which is Svetlana Kuznetsova, and this was on BT Sport. I asked her about the fact that, you know, she was waiting around for 3 hours. Did she see any of the match while she was in the locker room? And most specifically, did she see Svetlana Kuznetsova cut her own hair off during the match? Because that's exactly what Kuznetsova did. She got annoyed by her ponytail swishing around and hitting her in the face when she hit her forehand. So she took a pair of scissors and she started hacking chunks of hair off her own head mid-match. I mean, it was an amazing moment. And Pliskova had clearly seen this on Twitter herself and asked her whether she would ever consider doing the same thing. And she said, no, she would never do that. That's why she has her hair in a bun, Svetlana.
I think it's fair to say, I mean, it sounds like a cracking interview, David, but just for future, I think it's fair to say that 99.99% of people that you ask that question to will say, no, I've never considered doing that. But interestingly, she had the scissors in her bag. So it's not standard practice, I don't think, to walk onto court with the scissors in your tennis bag. So it must have had a certain degree of premeditation to it, or at least it had crossed her mind that the sheer weight of her plaited ponytail could possibly be an issue and she might need to be prepared for the scenario of needing to lessen that weight. I don't know. I would love to dig deep into the mind of Svetlana Kuznetsova at that moment.
Scissors do have another purpose, though, you know. I mean, they're not just for hair cutting, are they? So maybe she was using them for something else.
Yeah, maybe she needed to score some sausages or something. I don't know. Yeah,
maybe. But what do you think?
That's my primary use for scissors. That's what has been revealed about me on this tennis podcast.
I see. Now, Catherine, the hair chopping off episode, though, have you ever seen that before? There are two other occasions that we reckon it has happened. Can you name them?
On a tennis court?
Oh, yes.
Didn't Andy Murray do it? He started hacking away at his fringe or something.
Correct. That's one.
Yeah. No, I definitely can't think of a second one. No, there's not.
Say, yeah.
I don't have the filing cabinet of sort of tennis incidents in my brain isn't arranged according to sort of hair chopping off. Maybe it should be in future. Maybe this is going to be a new trend.
Could you should definitely have an index card for it so that you can do one of those sort things by hair chopping.
Sounds like the sort of thing Nick Kyrgios might do.
No.
So I'll guess Kyrgios, but he's not got that much hair. Oh, no, I think he takes his hair far too seriously. I take it all back. No. Who? Come on.
Kyrgios wasn't even alive when it happened. In fact, you were only two, because it was Boris Becker in 1988 in the Wimbledon semi-final against Ivan Lendl. That information, courtesy of Barry Flatman from The Times, who, if you're waiting at a bus stop with at 2 a.m., you can find some interesting information out, as I did there.
So apparently that,
yeah, so there we are. Boris Becker, Andy Murray and Svetlana Kuznetsova. That is an answer to a pub quiz trivia moment on the last time and the only times.
The most niche pub quiz ever to be staged.
Yes.
If you know a pub quiz which has those kind of questions, do let me know where it is because I would like to go.
Yes, absolutely. Now, tomorrow's action starts with Simona Halep up against Angelique Kerber. That could be a corker of a match. Those two in great form at the moment. And then Sybil Kova against Madison Keys, all on BT Sport 1 tomorrow if you're in the UK. Well worth tuning in for. We've had Martina Navratilova with us tonight. That was good fun. Incidentally, on Svetlana Kuznetsova, I know that I've just been bragging about the quality of my interview with Karolina Pliskova. Can I just hold my hand up and say that I did possibly one of the worst interviews in my career with Svetlana Kuznetsova yesterday? It resulted in quite a good answer that we ran and had a bit of a laugh about, because Kuznetsova got the hump with me. She wasn't very happy with my question at all.
Did you give her a pole vault?
I wish I had. No, I didn't give her a pole vault, actually. I tried to ask her. The idea behind my thinking was to ask her about the fairness of the fact that the way things have worked out is that she's come in with hardly any notice and hardly any time to prepare and is playing the tour finals. And then you've got Joe Konter in the outfit with the others on the photo shoot, you know, effectively feeling like a spare part because she doesn't even know if she's in it or not. And I tried to ask her about the fairness of that. I didn't phrase it particularly well. What she ended up thinking I was saying is that, you nasty Svetlana Kuznetsova, you've knocked our Joe Konter out. Is that fair, what you've done? I didn't quite phrase it like that, but that's how she took it. And she said, don't blame me. It's not my fault. I was just trying to get through to the finals. I mean, you're talking to me as though it's my fault. Anyway, so it wasn't exactly a career highlight.
But that in itself is very insightful, isn't it? She that was obviously her response to all of that internally, you know, feeling like she had deprived poor Joe Konter, the most improved player of the year, of her rightful place in the WTA finals at the 11th hour, which of course is absolutely not the case at all, because Kuznetsova earned that place fair and square. It was an unfortunate set of circumstances, for sure, that
they need an extra week,
I think,
though,
a lot
they?
Of people would question the decision to include Konter in that draw ceremony and photo shoot, etc. Luckily, Photoshop is a wonderful thing, and she has been airbrushed out of the official photo that was done on the eve of the tournament, which is marvellous. But yeah, it was awkward. It was really, really awkward. And I don't know what the answer is. It's a very tricky situation, having Moscow finish on the eve of the WTA finals. Look, it made it brilliantly exciting. There's no doubting that.
The answer is very simple, in my view. And that's the fact that that should have been a day that should have been 100% celebration. Okay, disappointment for the player who doesn't get in. But it should be about what an amazing story Svetlana Kuznetsova has caused by overturning the deficit and getting through. Now, of course, that was one of the storylines from it all, and so was her race to get here and to play. And I mean, look, she's managed to win as well, which is fantastic. But what should be happening is there should be a week between Moscow and this, and there should be nothing for a week, so that you have that big race for the finish line, and then everybody has a week to get ready for the tour finals and do their photo shoots and do some publicity. That's what should be happening, which is what happens on the ATP circuit these days.
Yep, I don't think anyone's arguing with that, David, and it'll be interesting to see what does happen. I mean, we know how desperately long it takes to make any kind of schedule changes in the world of tennis, so I wouldn't expect, you know, anything earth-shattering to happen, but I certainly think it'll be looked at because, you know, the situation, the flaws in the current situation were deeply exposed by the scenario that played out, as I say, exciting, but definitely awkward.
Was indeed. Now, Catherine, we're going to hear from some of the players that I've been speaking to for BT Sport. They've kindly let us have the audio from the interviews we did on the eve of the tournament, the WTA finals here. Let's start with Angelique Kerber, because, I mean, she is the favourite in many eyes. I mean, she's the world number one. And what really struck me, Catherine, I don't know how many dealings you've had with her at the Australian Open and so forth and the US Open as part of the Eurosport team. It really struck me with when she walked into the room how confident she is in herself now. There's no nervousness about the situation of being the player everybody's looking at. She just looks like she belongs. What's your experience?
Very similar, but somehow striking that perfect balance between having the confidence and owning. Well, I mean, I haven't seen her since the US Open, which of course is where she became world number one, but she looked so at ease with being a Grand Slam champion at the US Open. It was definitely a different demeanour to what I saw from her. It didn't have much to do with her at Wimbledon, where she obviously reached the final, but certainly a different demeanour to the French Open, which was a bit of a disaster for her. And, you know, she certainly didn't look timid or lacking in confidence, but she equally, you know, didn't have the strut of a Garbiñe Muguruza or something like that. But she has a very, very confident demeanour without being in any way assuming. She's completely unassuming somehow, completely natural, it seems to me. You know, I mentioned, I think, on the podcast that after she won that final in New York, she invited all the German Eurosport guys out to celebrate with her because she's got such a great relationship with them, and they've followed her so closely and have been so invested in her progress. She felt like they deserved to be a part of the celebrations, and I thought that was a really nice touch. And yeah, I've always been very won over by her.
Oh, that's a very nice story. I hadn't heard that one before, I don't think. Angelique Kerber, let's hear from her.
Australian was always for me the first one, and this emotion I will never forget, but a lot of following after with the Wimbledon, with New York, with the Olympics, the number one, so a lot of amazing moments that I have this year, and I will never forget 2016 in my life.
And it's not over yet.
It's not over yet, that's true.
Now, looking at the players that you're going to be playing this mm-hmm. week, I was looking at your head-to-heads against them. Many of them are really close. Mm-hmm. 5 wins, 6 losses against Radvanska, mm-hmm. 4-4 against Sibulkova. These are players you were at the same level as for many years. How have you done this?
I don't know. I mean, first of all, everybody who was here really deserved. I mean, they have all of them a great year as well. So I think doesn't matter against who I'm playing here, it will be tough matches, but this is what is good for this tournament, that to have the best players in the world. But for me, I don't know, I think I had so many experience from the last few years. I had really close matches, and I was trying to transfer this to the matches, and that was actually the goal also for this year, to playing a lot of good matches and winning a few tournaments. I mean, I was not expecting that this will be 2 Grand Slams, but I think it was just the experience from all the years, everything came together this year.
Now, your coach, Torben Beltz, would be, I imagine, a big part of everything that has happened to you over the last year or so. I was listening to an interview with him in which he said, when you were young, you didn't work very hard.
I find that hard to believe, but I mean, is that true? I mean, is that a learning process that you had to get used to?
That's true. I mean, when I was young, I was really not the fittest player, and that's changed in the last few years. I mean, I learned a lot, and I learned that you have to really have the confidence to go on court and know that you can run forever for 3 hours and you will be not tired. So this was a really long process for me, but yeah, he was right that when we start really, really years ago, I was not moving so good like today.
Well, you are now. Just occurs to me, sitting here, how comfortable you now seem in these surroundings, talking to people in interviews, cameras, however many interviews you're having to do. I remember a few years ago seeing you in a situation doing a much lower profile interview, and it wasn't something necessarily that you seemed to find that easy. Is that something that you now enjoy?
I really enjoy it right now, and I think that was also a process. I mean, a few years ago it was a little bit tough for me to sitting here relaxing talking to you guys, but now I'm really feeling confident. I know how what to expect. I know what I would like to say, and yeah, that changed as well in my career and as a person for me.
Is there anything you don't like about being world number one?
Not yet. I don't know. Of course, you have much more things to do. This is your schedule is much more tighter than year ago here, but this is of course what I try to enjoy, and I really like this part of of being number one right now.
Well, long may it continue. All the best for the week.
Thank you.
So that's Angelique Kerber, who plays Simona Halep on day three of the WTA Finals in 2016. Now, Halep, we'll hear from her as well, because I was very interested to find out from her about the impact of Darren Cahill.
Yeah, as we know, Australians are very relaxed. They are very nice people, and I enjoy a lot now relaxing myself during the days. I learned this from Darren. I enjoy more going out in the evening just for dinners. I enjoy more to visit some things in the city that I go. I enjoy more the time on court. I'm not taking in my mind just the result. I'm taking just to improve into myself, improve into my game, and just being happy that I'm doing what I love.
And you would put Darren's influence as part of that?
Yeah, a lot, because our Romanian mentality is a little bit different, because we are very, like, we panic very fast, and we are a little bit negative person, but now I'm going to the other way to be more positive.
So that's Simona Halep. I found it absolutely fascinating, Catherine, to hear Halep talk about the panic that she feels sometimes on a tennis court, and how Darren Cahill is able to just calm her down with his strict, simple Aussiness in many ways. But I can imagine that. I mean, I know Darren Cahill a little bit. I've interviewed him a number of times, and he's very easy to sort of feel soothed by in the presence of him, I think.
We've seen that before, haven't we? That, I mean, you get coaching relationships which are all about sort of a meshing of personalities and a matching of personalities. You know, Grigor Dimitrov and Danny Valvadu at the moment strikes me as one of those. You know, he just wants somebody that is sort of a friend as well as a coach, and someone that can put his arm around him, that he just feels brilliant in the company of. And I'm not saying Halep and Cahill is a contrast to that in any way. I suspect they do get on very well, and she's very likeable and easygoing, and he seems that to the extreme. But he's bringing something which she doesn't have, and it seems to be belief and calmness. And it's very, very interesting. And I suspect that calmness leads in to the belief, which is, I think, at the end of the day, the most significant single factor for Simona Halep. Does she believe that she is a Grand Slam champion in waiting? Because she ought to, because she really should be, you know, winning WTA finals and winning Grand Slams sooner rather than later.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Madison Keys is making her debut here, this time at the finals in Singapore. And Keys is somebody I hadn't met before. And she came into the room and you said unassuming. Now, that really does describe her. She wandered in, looked as though she might have got lost. You know, there was no minder with her. There was no sort of ceremony of walking in and announcing her presence. She just sort of appeared in the room. And we almost thought... He wasn't dressed as she normally would be, and I would barely recognize her. And then suddenly realized, oh, hello, you're here to be interviewed, aren't you? And she sat down, very, very nice to talk to, very open. And here's a little bit of what she had to say.
I think the biggest thing is that I've been just a lot more consistent, which was a huge goal of mine last year, and I wasn't quite able to do it. And then this year it's been... you know, kind of the number one thing on my goal list. And I've been really, really proud of myself to be able to push myself in practice so that it translates over onto the court.
And have you had to just sort of slightly play within yourself a little bit more because you hit the ball so hard? Is it hard not to just hit it as hard as you can all the time?
Yeah, that's definitely been something that I've had to work on. Backing off at the right times and not going for something when it's not there. And, you know, my first instinct is to kind of just hit harder and harder and harder. So having to change that and play smarter has been a big thing for me.
Over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of expectation around you. I've heard some seriously big names say that you could go all the way to the top. What is that like for you? Do you have to block that out?
I think you hear it and you take that as a compliment, and you know all of these people have done it and they think that I can as well. So that just helps motivate you, but also not listening to it too much, and just really focusing on how I feel and, you know, just believing in myself. And, you know, going out and doing everything that I can to get better every day.
And Catherine, I found it really interesting that she's fully aware of how hard she hits the ball and how much of a challenge it is going to be for her to harness that and not overdo it and find the right times. I mean, it's probably going to be something that plagues her throughout her whole career, that balance.
Yeah, well, look at... Petra Kvitova and her struggle to find that balance on her day when those shots are going in. She's unplayable. We've talked about that very, very recently. You know, when she made her charge, it was a possibility that she could get into the WTA finals. But obviously that didn't happen. But when it goes wrong, the percentage, the margin for error is so low that it goes very badly wrong. It's like it all malfunctions. And she knows that's her game. She's never going to be able to completely subvert that and make herself, you know, a Simona Halep or a Caroline Wozniacki. But it's about managing that style of play and mitigating the weaknesses and I don't know, trying, I guess, to develop... A plan B when, you know, the hard-hitting perhaps isn't quite working out. But as you say, she seems to be completely, she's very switched on, isn't she? I think she knows herself. She knows her game, and I have belief that she. I think there will be bad days. I think there'll be horror show days, but I'm pretty confident that she'll have enough very, very good days.
I agree, and actually, the strides she's made this year to get into the world's top 10, to qualify for Singapore, you don't do that with just a couple of spectacular results. You have to keep producing. She's done it on clay to reach the final of the French Open, and I think that she will go all the way eventually and top the sport. How long for, I'm not sure, but she clearly really wants it. That much is clear. And actually, Thomas Hogstad, I think, is a good type of coach for her. Somebody who's a bit of a taskmaster, not too pally with her. I think that's the sort of thing that she will need. Now, Garbiñe Muguruza is somebody who already has scaled the very heights, hasn't she, with winning the French Open. But she hasn't done an awful lot else this year. We talked about how she'd let this position go against Pliskova today, 4-love up in the final set, ended up losing. And she is really an enigma, is Garbiñe Muguruza to me in many ways. And I spoke to her about that issue of consistency and how much it bothers her.
I think my style of game, my personality, my tennis is not that consistent, maybe, but I'm not sure that's also the best for my game. You know, there are certain players that they rather win tournaments, 3-4 tournaments in their whole year, or even less, than maybe be every week on semifinals. So I'm not sure how my game is. I'm trying to find it yet. So for now, I'm good.
I bet that helps, though, in a way that you can appreciate that you understand that when you go into big matches, that you don't worry about maybe having had a bad week the week before, mm-hmm. so that you come here to the WTA finals and it's a new start, clean slate.
I try to have a clean start every tournament because it's new hope, new tournament, kind of new mindset. So I come here at Singapore and I'm thinking about my first match. I'm playing against an opponent. What do I have to do to try to win that match? And nothing really else. Just that. Physically good also. So I think that's the perfect starting point.
Can I ask just a little bit what it is like being out on the court in the moment, in the battle? And we have on-court coaching. We see little mm-hmm. moments of what it must be like, the pressures, the tensions, the stress that you are under. I mean, you know, you seem so relaxed talking to you now away from the court. What is it like getting on the court and having all of this going on? Mm.
Well, there's a new person when you're in the court, you know, because you're competing, you are in a stress situation, and you have a camera in your face all the time. So there are certain moments where you can be, you know, a little bit upset or super happy or emotional, just emotional, and there's always somebody like here so they can see everything a little bit. So sometimes it's hard to manage all this. I just try to be natural on the court. Sometimes I could look like very happy, sometimes not happy at all, but I just try to be natural on myself there.
But generally, do you feel that you can win this tournament?
I always feel I can win the tournament I go to play. I always feel like I'm one of the players that can hold a trophy. That's what I have to believe, and I really think so. So, yeah, I'm gonna try to put all my chances in my hand.
She doesn't worry about much, does she, Muguruza? She has, or at least she sounds as if she has total belief in herself at all times, Catherine.
That's certainly always my impression of her, for sure. I mean, she has this poise, she has this strut that I mentioned earlier. I don't think she's worried. I think she sees it as perhaps, you know, a natural blip that she's going through at the moment. There are plenty of other people that have had a similar blip after winning their first Grand Slam. Even this year, I referenced, you know, Angelique Kerber. Okay, Muguruza's is lasting an awful lot longer, but unless she's a fantastic actress. And I do think there's an element of that. I think, you know, that poise, I get the impression that poise masks a lot, because again, I'm rehashing anecdotes here, but I remember being with her after that win she had over Serena 2 years ago at the French Open, which was her announcement onto the stage. And she wasn't a different person. I still see that young girl, you know, with the bright lights dazzling her eyes in that big press conference room. I still see that person in her, but it's hidden away. There's definitely a shell there now, a shell which is what we all see most of the time. It sounds like you got under her skin a little bit more than she usually lets people in, but she's very much in control. She gives you exactly what she wants to give you. And I do think she's developed, you know, a little bit of that. Well, what so many of the top players have it. Maria Sharapova's a master at it, isn't she? Serena Williams, she only gives you what she wants to give you. She's, you know, she's every inch the Grand Slam champion in terms of her game and her demeanour. But she's an enigma. She is. She's interesting. I very rarely feel like I fully understand her or can relate to her, perhaps.
She certainly carries herself with great confidence, and I found her quite charming, but clearly somebody who had total control of the situation. She was only going to answer questions the way she wanted to. I wasn't going to be able to push her into areas or discomfort in the interview at all. Not that I was necessarily trying to, but I just found it interesting that she controls the agenda of what she speaks about.
Yes, I think that was perhaps the point I was trying to make, but you made it a lot more pithily, David. Well done.
Awesome. So, Catherine, tiebreak tens is what you've been covering over the last few days. Tell us all about it. What was it like?
It is. It was very interesting indeed. Obviously, to fill anyone in that doesn't know, it was a field of Goran Ivanišević, Andy Murray and Marcus Willis. They were in one group. And Dominic Thiem, Tommy Haas and Joe Wilfried Tsonga, who were in another group. The semi-finalists were Murray and Ivanišević, who incidentally had a cracking match in their group stage. First to 10-point tiebreaks, all the matches. And, I mean, perhaps Goran knew deep down that he wasn't going to win it, but he really did give Murray a run for his money, certainly for the first few points. And that was cracking. And Thiem and Tsonga came through from the other group and ended up being a Thiem Murray final. And Dominic Thiem played the tiebreak of his life. He stunned Andy Murray. I think he won the first 4 points. I think he went 4-love up. Utterly sensational tennis. Really went for it. Looked like he couldn't miss. Andy Murray looked pretty hacked off. To be honest, of course, it's a winner-take-all tournament. $250,000 prize. And for Andy Murray, that's worth an awful lot more than it was last December when the last tiebreak tens tournament took place, and he also lost in the final to Kyle Edmund. Thank you, Brexit. It was extremely interesting. Andy Murray was not pleased to lose it. Dominic Thiem was delighted to win it. He said that his friends and family will be receiving very nice Christmas presents this year. He also said he'd be giving some of the money to charity. He's a very charming young man, Dominic Thiem. He's perhaps not Mr. Charisma, but in a very likeable way. You know, he seems like he's completely unaffected by his status in the game. And, you know, he's David Beckham in Austria. He's the man. And, you know, he still walks around, is polite to everybody. He's very earnest, you know, he doesn't make an awful lot of jokes, certainly not publicly, but really likeable. Obviously, the backhand, when that's in full flow, it's a joy. And, it was very interesting. In many ways, Goran was the star of the show, as he so often is. I really think Andy Murray enjoyed that match he played against Goran, and I think he enjoyed watching Goran play his other matches. It was great to see Marcus Willis play Goran. I think he got a bit starstruck and struggled a bit to perform. It was very, very interesting, that one. Marcus Willis had Goran as his childhood idol growing up. So, that was interesting. But he seemed annoyed to lose that. I went over and tried to get a quick interview with him afterwards. And I said, oh, you know, Marcus, how was it playing your childhood idol, expecting to get some really touching comments? And he said, well, I lost, so not great. And
Hence why we're not going to play that one on the tennis podcast, because that one doesn't sound like it's gold already. But if you do want to hear Marcus Willis, 2 weeks ago, we did half an hour with him, so have a listen to that instead. Now, the one thing I did think, the same way as in the final in the Royal Albert Hall event, was you had a different atmosphere altogether in the final, didn't you? When that money was on the line, and when it was the sort of the young kid against this world number two, and team's game is so explosive. There are not many players who can make Andy Murray basically redundant in rallies. Even as fast as he is, even as good as his defence is, he can hit through Murray. Maybe he can only do it for a short period of time. But team has got to be one of the most explosive players in the world right now.
Absolutely. And some of the things that struck me were his serve. He's definitely got extra muscle on that serve. You know, he's not a huge guy. He's got a sort of a more slight frame than Andy Murray. It all comes from timing, like on that backhand. And there was real muscle on that serve. He was really going for it. And he made Andy Murray look a bit impotent, really. There he was scampering around at the back of the court. Was struggling to get a racket on the ball. Certainly, you know, for the first 5 or 6 points of that tie break, when he's on Dominic Thiem, he's almost unplayable. I mean, and if he can get anywhere near that kind of form and sort out his schedule, I won't bang on about it in detail again, but sort out the schedule. I mean, he should be contending at the very least at the French Open. I know he loves to play on clay, but I don't see why he can't contend on hard courts as well. And who knows about grass in the future? I think he's got some learning to do on grass, but he is so exciting, so exciting. If only he wasn't a Chelsea fan.
Yeah, you can't have everything, can you? I heard during the commentary, Mars McLagan was on commentary. One slight counterpoint he put to the playing too much argument, he said that the view of team's coach, Gunter Bresnik, was play 1 year like this, play everything, and you will give yourself a base to be able to handle pretty much anything. And you can play less next year, but your body will and your mind will be used to it.
Okay. I mean, in principle, that sounds okay. But number one, he did it last year as well. And number two, as I say, he signed up for Brisbane and Sydney. So it looks like he's intending to carry on with it next year. So nice try, Miles. But I need some more evidence to
Catherine
be convinced
Whittaker,
that that's
not,
what he's at playing
not,
at.
Not won over by that argument, Miles. Sorry. Right now, Andy
I'd love
Murray.
To be. I'd love to be. I'd love to think that was the plan. And I hope it is. But I'm sceptical. The Brisbane and Sydney thing really worries me. I really don't want him to do that. I don't. Unless he crashes out first round of Brisbane and, you know, then takes a wild card into Sydney. I certainly understand the wisdom of that. Sydney's a great event. It's nothing to do with that. But there's a reason why generally the guys that win the Grand Slams don't play the week before a slam. They just don't. And he needs to be seeing himself in that bracket.
Catherine Whittaker here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you by The Telegraph. Now, Andy Murray is going for number one in the world. He can do it in the next 14 days. He can be number one in the world. If he were to win Vienna and to win Paris, and Novak Djokovic doesn't get to the final of Paris. Catherine got one of the funniest interviews I've ever heard with him. And here's why. Listen to this.
I think it's good fun. I think in this situation it works great as well, with the tournament just around the corner. We have all the players here. The players are motivated to get, you know, good practice in. So, you know, the quality of the tennis tonight, maybe at the beginning wasn't so good. I think it improved as it went on a bit, and, you know, the players want to play well. You know, some guys might have matches tomorrow. So I think in this situation, I think it works well. And, you know, I don't know how it's been received on the TV and by the fans, but he seems to enjoy it here, and it's good.
Just finally, you're sticking around at Vienna to play the tournament this week, Paris next week. Everyone knows what's on the line for you at the end of the year. Are you motivated to go for that number one ranking?
My goal is to try and win the tournament this week and then reassess after this week's done and, you know, take it from there. I can't look too far ahead. I need to win pretty much every match I play between now and the end of the year, so I start getting them ahead of myself, then, you know, that's not going to work. So try my best to win my matches here and then reassess after that. But it's been a good few months and I'll try to keep it going here.
So best of luck. Thank you, Andy. Cheers.
Celebrate good times. Come on, David.
Yeah, well, you know, if he gets to number one in the world, Catherine, he will be celebrating. So well done on choosing the song to go with the interview. Andy Murray, as you heard, as you maybe just about could pick out from that audio, isn't having any of Catherine's narrative of, isn't it exciting how you're going for world number one? Because Andy Murray's just going to take it one match at a time. And if he gets to number one, it's great.
To be fair, it was definitely a different answer to the one he gave in Shanghai, which is obviously the last time we saw him on the tour, when he said, I hadn't really thought about doing it this year. It was my goal to do it for next year. And, you know, perhaps I'll have to think about it and reassess. He's obviously readjusted his thinking somewhat, and is thinking about the possibility, at least, of doing it this year, which we know he wasn't 2 or 3 weeks ago. So, okay, yes. He's a professional. He very wisely is playing down expectations, because frankly, it is for me still unlikely that he'll do it this year. Not massively unlikely, but unlikely, I think. So I certainly think he's right to do that. But I do think it's in his mind as a more pressing possibility than it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. And again, rightly so, because it's not beyond the realms of possibility at all anymore. That we have the mathematical equations, don't we? We know exactly what needs to happen, and could happen. And also there's the fact that it's not all within his control. If it was just win Vienna and Paris and you're world number one, that's a very different scenario to win Vienna and Paris and also hope that the world number one doesn't reach the final. You know, when it's not in your control, what can you say, really? So I think it was understandable, but good soundtrack.
Pole vault, Catherine.
Oh gosh,
do you want some really good news?
Yeah, that we're not doing pole vault.
Correct. Because
are we really not?
No.
Wow.
This week
Dreams do come true. We're doing
a special feature this week. Hashtag tennis podcast pets.
It's a very visual feature for a podcast, this though, David. How's this going to work?
All we're going to do is we're just going to point out, everybody, go to Twitter, go to @tennispodcast.
It's been the best week ever on Tennis Podcast Twitter. I have been beside myself.
Let's just explain why. Why are we doing hashtag tennis podcast pets, Catherine?
Well, I don't know. You started it. I'm very supportive.
Keep out of it. Right. Well, okay. Anyway, the reason we're doing it is because basically every week on the podcast, as anybody who listens to this regularly will know, we get gatecrashed by however many members of your animal family that you decide to have in the house at any one time. Who was it last week? It was Evie and
Ginny.
What was the other one? Ginny.
And Ginny.
I don't know where Rosie's gone. Rosie was turfed out last week. There's another one, isn't there?
Rosie's very threatened. There's Bella.
All right. Okay. So that's
I'm not
four,
sure Bella has ever
dogs.
Guested on the tennis podcast, but you know.
But she's with
she's
us
in the
this
queue.
Week. Okay, so there are no pets on the show this week?
No, I feel bad for Bella now. I'll find a way for Bella to get on.
She has been in touch, actually, and she has said she feels pretty left out.
Actually, on the Tennis Podcast Facebook page, which you can go to and check out all the fabulous content we put on there, one of, I think, the photo that we posted of Rosie a couple of weeks ago with posing with her tennis ball was responded to by my auntie, who Bella lives with a photo of Bella showing her approval. So if anybody is for some crazy reason particularly interested in my pet entourage, then Bella is available to view on the Tennis Podcast Facebook page.
Okay, anyway, so but basically because of all this, I decided to start the hashtag Tennis Podcast Pets and get people to send in pictures of their Tennis Podcast Pets, people that like the show, whose pets listen to the show, who watch tennis in their spare time, and people have been inundating us with pictures of their cats watching Mardy Fish on the television. We've got a ferret somebody sent in that is a regular Tennis Podcast listener.
I love the ferret.
Do have a look. Yeah, do have a look. There is there's Charlie, there's Kip and Juno, there's one named after Andy Murray. There
Lola
is a Tess.
And Harvey.
Oh dear, there's so many of them that have been coming flooding into
Sim
us.
And Nim, a cat. Who else have we got?
We've
had turkeys. With turkeys from a colleague of ours, Sarah Willen, and I'm led to believe that one of those turkeys is ill. So just.
We
Tennis Podcast Pets casualty, but we wish that turkey all the best.
Well, yeah, indeed. Now that she's been, or he been, name-checked on the show, no doubt that'll be the tonic required for a full recovery.
Quite.
So do send us pictures of your Tennis Podcast Pets on Twitter, at Tennis Podcast. Catherine, I think that's about all for now, isn't it?
Unless we want to do more Tennis Podcast Pets, I mean, I'll stay recording all night just to talk about the pets. But as perhaps more
it's three,
of a visual, it's more of a visual feature. Okay.
3:30 a.m. I think I've just about had enough. So thank you all for listening to us here on the show. I should say as well that 3:30 a.m. is a sign of great dedication. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'm quite proud of myself for managing to record it. What day is it? I have no idea. But anyway.
Well, it's a different day for you than it is for me.
It is, isn't it? We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.